Don't Nuke the Climate, der Podcast, weil es nicht egal ist, wie wir dem Klimawandel entgegentreten. Die Zukunft ist erneuerbar, nicht radioaktiv. Ganz herzlich willkommen zur Juni-Ausgabe unseres Podcasts, sagt Gabi Schweiger von den Freistädter Müttern gegen Atomgefahr. Was heute ansteht, das ist ein erster Rückblick auf die Nuclear Energy Conference, die dieses Jahr wieder in Prag stattgefunden hat und den Titel trägt Risiken des tschechischen Reaktordeals des Jahrhunderts. Es geht ja darum, dass Tschechien wild entschlossen ist, bis zu 4 neue Reaktoren bauen zu wollen. Die beiden Gesellschaften EDF aus Frankreich sowie die Korean Hydrogen Nuclear Power Gesellschaft sind im Rennen. Noch steht nicht fest, welcher der beiden Konzerne zum Zug kommen soll. Allerdings gibt es vorangestellt noch etwas zu berichten, nämlich von einem Symposium, das just einen Tag vor der Nuclear Energy Conference in Prag stattgefunden hat. Und wenn man sich das zu Gemüte führt, ist die Wahrscheinlichkeit sehr groß, dass die Regierung zur Vergabe der Aufträge an EDF, an die französische Gesellschaft, tendiert. Ich darf hier aus den tschechischen Medien zitieren. Die Übersetzung stammt von Gabi Reitinger-Rover. Mehr als 100 Nuklearexperten, Akademiker und Vertreter der tschechischen Industrie hatten die einmalige Gelegenheit, sich ausführlich über die EPR 1200 Technologie zu informieren, die von der EDF für den Bau der neuen Kernkraftwerksblöcke in der Tschechischen Republik angeboten wird. Das Symposium wurde vom französischen Botschafter in Tschechien, von Stefan Krusa und von Tomáš Éla, dem stellvertretenden Leiter der Abteilung für Energie und Nuklearressourcen des Ministeriums für Industrie und Handel der Tschechischen Republik, eröffnet. 30 der weltweit führenden Experten von EDF, Framatom und Arabell Solutions stellten dem tschechischen Publikum während der ganztägigen Veranstaltung den EPR 1200 Kraftwerksblock außerordentlich detailliert vor. Die Firma EDF hat die Absicht, starke industrielle und technische Beziehungen zur Tschechischen Republik aufzubauen. Deshalb wollen wir die EPR 1200 Technologie nicht nur CES, sondern der gesamten tschechischen Atomgemeinschaft zur Verfügung stellen, sagte Roman Stebor, Direktor der tschechischen EDF-Niederlassung. Es geht dann weiter mit Aussagen wie die von Josef Berlik, dem Exekutivdirektor der tschechischen Energieallianz. Die tschechische Industrie zweifelt nicht an der hohen Qualität der EPR-Technologie im Kernsektor. Eine Reihe von Lieferungen an einzelne Unternehmen sind bereits im Gange, sodass der Prozess der Anpassung tschechischer Unternehmen an die EPR-Technologie kontinuierlich verläuft, sagte er. Derzeit registriert die Firma EDF etwa 200 tschechische Unternehmen, die als Lieferanten für neue Kraftwerksblöcke in der Tschechischen Republik in Frage kommen. 90 von ihnen befinden sich in der Präqualifikationsphase. Wenn sie zu qualifizierten Zulieferern der EDF werden, könnten sie nicht nur der Tschechischen Republik, sondern auch in einer Reihe anderer EDF-Kraftwerksprojekte in ganz Europa Arbeit finden. Der EDF-Manager für Lieferantenaudits, Bilel Uertani, meint dazu, die bisherig erfolgreiche Zusammenarbeit und die Tatsache, dass wir uns gemeinsam an europäische technische Normen und Standards gewöhnt haben, prädestinieren tschechische Unternehmen für einen umfassenden Einsatz bei EDF-Projekten. Und dann noch eine Aussage von Sarah Ilu, die für das EDF-Angebot für CES zuständige Direktorin. Die Tschechische Republik ist kein Neuling in Sachen Kernenergie. Sie verfügt nicht nur über eine sehr starke Nuklearindustrie, sondern auch über ein hervorragendes technisches, akademisches Forschungsumfeld in vielen technischen Bereichen, die für die Nuklearindustrie entscheidend sind. Im Rahmen unserer Vision, eine Flotte europäischer Reaktoren zu bauen, wollen wir die Tschechische Republik zu einem Technologiezentrum für den EPR 1200 machen, das nicht nur dem tschechischen Programm, sondern auch anderen EDF-Projekten in ganz Europa dienen wird, sagt Ilus. Ein interessantes Detail wird hier auch angeführt. Wir wissen ja alle, dass die Kraftwerksflotte besonders in heißen Sommern an ihre Grenzen stoßt und auch darüber hinaus. Doch genau das wird irgendwie umgekehrt erzählt von Jiří Marek, dem Vorsitzenden des Verbandes der Nuklearveteranen. Er meint, angesichts der zunehmenden Probleme, die durch den Klimawandel verursacht werden, ist die Frage nach der Wahl der geeigneten Technologie, die an die neuen Bedingungen angepasst sind, sehr wichtig. Da 36 der 57 im Betrieb befindlichen Reaktoren in Frankreich mit Flusswasser gekühlt werden, ist klar, dass die Firma EDF über umfangreiche Erfahrungen bei der Optimierung ihrer Kühlungslösungen für solche Bedingungen verfügt. Es handelt sich also um eine der größten wirtschaftlichen Kooperationen, die hier angebahnt wird. Und so haben wir für den ersten Teil des Rückblicks auf die Nuclear Energy Konferenz 2024 Yves Marignac ins Programm genommen. Der Aktivist aus Frankreich von der Organisation Negawatt sieht die Kompetenzen und die Ausprägung von EDF, der Electricité de France, und ihrem Angebot, dem EPR 1200, naturgemäß ganz anders. Aufgenommen wurde diese Präsentation im feinen Café Langhans in der Prager Innenstadt.
I want to start actually with some basic information on the situation of France when it comes to nuclear energy. You might already know some of it, but the first very important thing is that France is, I think it's fair to say, a kind of champion in terms of development of its domestic nuclear program. It has developed 58 reactors. Two of them have been shut down, so we are still with 56, and a whole set of nuclear facilities from what we call the fuel cycle. It's a old or aging nuclear fleet. The average is 38 years of operation, but it's and maybe it's important to keep in mind that because it's so massive, nuclear energy has an important role in the industry and the economy, and therefore in the framing of not only the French energy policy, but it's economic policy and somehow diplomatic and geopolitical one to some extent. The other thing I want to highlight, because one can't really understand the current situation and how France is likely to deliver or not on what it promised to the Czech Republic in terms of responding in this call for tender, is to understand the shift in the political situation that we've seen over the past 10 years. It was very new for French politics. 12 years ago, the previous president, when he ran for the presidential election, committed to reduce the dependency of France not only to fossil fuels, of course, but also to nuclear power, and that was really completely new. He made some decisions to cap French nuclear capacity, to start shutting down some reactors, and to commit to reduce the share of nuclear power in the overall electric generation, and started, but very shyly, I would say, to make decisions about that. But then we had our new president still in place, Emmanuel Macron, who started by committing to keeping the same line, but then changed gradually his mind, and now talks of nuclear energy as part of the ecological future of France, and as committed in a very important speech in February 2022 to start a new nuclear adventure for France and come back to the good old age of French greatness thanks to its nuclear power. And then he took a series of decisions that are really turning that back to the previous ones. Life extension of all reactors to 60 years. A new build program of some advanced or newly designed EPR reactors, that the same as the one that is being built in Flamanville in France, and a bigger and the same, although it's a smaller size, that the one EDF is proposing to the Czech Republic. He also committed to starting a program of so-called small modular reactors, so smaller units, more innovative ones. And so the question is, what is at stake why such a change? And of course, then what does it mean regarding the capacity of France to export nuclear reactors? To understand what is at stake, I would focus on what I call a political lock-in and some reasons why France is keeping this nuclear policy. And I want to emphasize first that it's not for the official reason. The official reason that we need to keep that nuclear program, we need a life extension and we need new reactors to meet our climate objectives under the Paris Agreement. So you can see that both the president, again, in this 2022 speech, but also the then prime minister, remained prime minister until early this year, both made statements that we can't have a sustainable energy policy if nuclear is not included. We can't have energy security. We can't have climate neutrality by 2050 without nuclear power. The thing is, they made those statements having on their desks official reports, including those from RTE, which you can see here, and from ADEME, so that the French electric grid operator and the French energy agency both made prospective studies, built scenarios, and showed in their reports that scenarios with 100% renewables by 2050 are in line with energy security objectives, can meet climate neutrality objectives, and are not more expensive under realistic conditions than those with nuclear power. So there's a denial of the reality of options, which brings me to say that the real reasons for keeping this nuclear policy are not the climate and energy issues, but other ones, and I will summarize it with three main factors, what I call that political lock-in. The first one is the military motive. It's often forgotten, but it's in a country like France, which is the only one in the European Union with nuclear weapons. It's very important. And Emmanuel Macron, again, in another famous speech back in 2020, made it very clear that we can't have nuclear military power if we don't have a nuclear civilian program or the other way around. And that actually led to explicitly acknowledge that the decision to start a new program of building of reactors has, to some extent, it is justified by the need to maintain some competencies that are needed for the military program. That's the first point. The second one is what I call the cliff effect, which relates to the fact that 80% of the reactors were started up in 10 years, which leads to the kind of curve that you see on the graph when you project their shutting down under a 40 years lifetime schedule or 50 years lifetime schedule. That means France has to deal with shutting down a lot of reactors over a very short period, which brings energy security issues and financial issues, because it's assets and revenues that turned into losses and expenses for decommissioning, for instance, which brought the former CEO of EDF, Jean-Bernard Lévy, to say in a public hearing in the National Assembly in 2018, EDF is like a cyclist who has to pedal, not to fall. In other words, we need to keep going with nuclear reactors, life extension and new build, otherwise EDF could financially and industrially collapse. Therefore, this strategy to postpone any shutdown issues by pursuing systematic life extension. The third main factor in the political lock-in is what I call the too big to fail excuse. It's the fact that EDF is too big to let it collapse, so the government will make anything to keep it going. Although EDF is in a critical financial situation with more than 50 billion euros of debt and ongoing costs that are increasingly up for operating the fleet, future costs that are uncertain but rising under any estimate, and therefore a global picture of increasingly non-profitable assets which are bound to massively turn into heavy liabilities. And that is the real rationale for renationalizing EDF last year, although the government said this was essential to enable EDF to accelerate on new nuclear project. This global picture leads us to a kind of crazy or paradoxical situation where we have the president that Ted did new objective of going back to the great adventure of civil nuclear power in France with a set of objectives that I already mentioned. But the response to that speech was either by the president of the French Nuclear Safety Authority, Bernard de Rozuc, or by the CEO of EDF, to call for a Marshall Plan to rebuild nuclear capacities so that the industry could cope with the objectives. And the chair of the French Nuclear Safety Authority even said in that public hearing that he thought the industry is not in a position to safely meet the political objectives that the government set. So before this statement by Emmanuel Macron, the narrative by the industry was that it lacked some objectives to maintain capacities, but after the speech, the narrative became that capacities were missing to meet the objectives. The funny thing is that no one seemed ever to consider that we could adjust objectives to capacities. And even the other way around, since Macron made that statement, I mean, there's a kind of excitement which brings the industry to always add new objectives, as you can see, more life extension, more new reactors, multiple designs to be developed, and export projects, including those of this EPR 1200 for Czech Republic. So having set that global picture, which I think explains some of the difficulties we are to consider, I will now focus on what I call the implementation gap. So it's the reality check of where the industry stands in terms of capacities, financial conditions, achievements, and so on. Reality check in the face of what it promises or the objective that it set. And I want to start with the performance gap, which lies to, I mean, how is the French nuclear fleet performing in recent years? The then Minister of Energy Transition said in October 23 that France needs to increase its nuclear generation by 30% by 2030, which of course can't rely on new reactors. So it means the performance of the fleet needs to go back to a normal level, I would say, because it's been very bad over the past few years. You can see on the left a graph of the decrease in the overall monthly output compared to the average of the past 10 years, which is the dotted line in the middle of the higher part. So the output has been decreasing, and you can see on the right how it performed in terms of overall generation over years. We had a very bad year in 2022 due to safety issues that led to shutting down temporarily up to 15 reactors, and the load factor of the overall fleet fell to 52%, when you would expect 75% to 80% for a well-managed nuclear fleet. So that means, one-third of loss in the generation compared to what would be expected. What we see is that we don't only witness a trend to a decrease in the overall generation, as you can see, but also an increase in the uncertainty of the year-to-year production, which is, of course, a big issue for the French electric system and to some extent the European one. But the the fleet has been really bad performing due to safety and management and maintenance issues. The second gap is that of capacities, and I mean industrial capacities, but I will focus on the human capacities. And again, the same Minister of Energy Transition back in April last year provided some numbers on how many people the industry needs to recruit on a massive scale to manage. Not only to deal with new objective, but to compensate for some retirement, massive retirement of people in the industry. And these numbers came from a report by the group that is gathering all the French nuclear companies or companies having business in the nuclear field. You can see here the numbers. The needs are in orange, and you can see that it's both a matter of compensating for retirements and increasing the capacity. One striking number when you get down to what it means in terms of jobs is that the industry would need to recruit 10% of all young engineers trained each year in France, which of course is unrealistic if you consider the needs of other sectors. And that is even before the increase in domestic and export project that I mentioned, which means the need for jobs to meet the objective is even higher than appears on that graph from this GFEN report. Third implementation gap, I will focus on exports. And of course, that is of specific interest for the discussion in the Czech Republic. The French industry has always had very big expectations when it comes to exporting. And one quote which summarizes it, that one from a report of a former CEO of EDF. He was not anymore CEO at that time, but that is a report to then President, French President Nicolas Sarkozy. And in that report, François Roussely estimated that, the overall new capacity that would be built every year in the world would reach 20 to 30 gigawatts, and that an ambitious player like France could set for taking one quarter of that market. So that means something like 5 reactors or more exported every year. That is in a stark contrast with the real experience of France, which only exported directly 13 reactors since it started its nuclear program. So it's a very low and bad record compared to export by the US, Russia, and other players. Nevertheless, the current CEO of EDF a few months ago said the ambition of EDF, although its current record is that it built one reactor over a decade, is to go for building 2 reactors a year, which is just wishful thinking out of the blue. It's interesting to note that in a letter to the CEO of EDF, one and a half year ago, the government, actually the agency that is managing the government's industrial assets, so the owner of EDF, sent a letter saying how it is concerned with the industrial capacity to cope with exports, and say that the industry really need to consolidate its projections in terms of capacity before it commits to exporting projects. And at that time, we actually understood in France that this was a clear warning against EDF bidding for the Czech reactors. Fourth gap is the completion gap, and I'm coming back now to the Flamanville EPR reactor, which is still being built since 2007 in west of France. And I like that quote by yet another former CEO of EDF, which was in charge when this project started to be built. And he says now that, well, it was actually too complicated and virtually unbuildable. Okay, fair enough. The result is a series of delays and overcosts with by at least 10 billions when we talk about overcost. And you can see here that it's not specific to the EPR being built in France, the same as applied to the one that France built in Finland, the same is still applying to the two reactors that France is building in the UK.
Ihr hört Don't Nuke the Climate, den Podcast im Freien Radio Freistadt. Heute mit einem ersten Teil des Rückblicks auf die Nuclear Energy Conference 2024 in Prag.
So maybe focusing on that one, because that is the one about the EPR 1200. So when it comes to plans to build new EPRs on top of those which are listed in the table, so France has developed a new EPR2 design, which is supposed to be simplified, which, by the way, brings a risk of recession in terms of safety performance. This reactor, this EPR2 design, is still in the very early design phase. France is not yet prepared to build it, far from it. Current government estimates are that it couldn't be built by 2035, and more realistically, still very optimistically, 2037. And the EPR 1200 that France is proposing for Czech Republic is actually based on the same EPR2 design. It just has one loop less, because the power is reduced. Which means that it's still also at a very early design phase. It hasn't come through any regulatory licensing step in France. So everything remains to be done in terms of generic design license, which will be on the shoulder of the Czech Nuclear Safety Authority. Finally, very quickly, to other gaps. The trust and quality. We had a lot of experiences with very severe lack of competence and or fraudulent intentions over the recent years. And even very recently, the Nuclear Safety Authority said that they are still seeing a lot of weaknesses in industrial rigor and a lot of falsification and counterfeiting, which means that how much you can rely on delivery of quality in export is a big question. And finally, the financial gap. France is still struggling with finding a market scheme to finance the life extension of the existing reactors, and even further when it comes to building new ones. There are some prices, there are some costs that the French government or EDF are flying, you know, for public communication for the new EPR program. But again, very recently, the CEO of EDF say he actually doesn't want to commit, even if they have started contracting for some of the heavy equipments for these EPRs and so on. They still don't want to commit on the projected costs, which is very odd, and of course also applies for the projected export in the Czech Republic. So altogether we are in a situation where there's a lot of political lock-in to explain why this nuclear renaissance or new push in France, back to nuclear puissance, as we say, and as the French Minister of Economics says. But the same minister, and he should know because he is in place since 2017, since Macron arrived, he recently said that even building 6 new EPR in France is a project of gigantic scales, and that this looks like the reasonable amount of what the French industry could cope with, which means that when it comes to projects abroad, it will most surely lack the capacity, like the market conditions, the financial resources to deliver. And it will, of course, focus on French projects first before dealing with exports, which means that there is a high risk, of course, with a project like this EPR 1200. And I actually think that whatever guarantee EDF wants to provide, whatever it commits to in terms of quality, in terms of deadlines, in terms of costs, it is actually not in a position to provide any decent guarantees that it will deliver according to what it commits. Thank you very much.
Nun sollte an dieser Stelle noch erwähnt werden, ein Phänomen, das derzeit in Europa umgeht, nämlich das der Negativstrompreise. Und gerade Atomstaaten wie Frankreich trifft das besonders hart, denn es heißt, entweder zahlt der Betreiber drauf, um ins Netz einspeisen zu dürfen, oder er muss Atomkraftwerke runterfahren, was immer ein gewisses Risiko mit sich bringt und alles andere als wirtschaftlich ist. Und dieses Phänomen wird mehr werden, wenn wir es mit der Energiewende ernst meinen, denn die Erneuerbaren werden immer billiger und immer effektiver und auch immer mehr. Und das ist gut so. Das heißt, jeder Cent, der in Zukunft investiert werden soll und jedes Hirnschmalz, das eingesetzt werden soll, muss sich der Verbesserung von Speichertechnologien und der Vermehrung von Speichermöglichkeiten widmen. Fragen aus dem Publikum im Café Langhans gab es dann natürlich auch noch. Eine zum Beispiel nach der doch etwas geänderten politischen Situation in Frankreich, nach dem desaströsen Abschneiden der Partei von Emmanuel Macron, der noch am Tag der Ergebnisse Neuwahlen ausgerufen hat. Das wollten einige beantwortet haben.
Well, I wish I could answer. No, I mean, when I prepared this, I actually thought that, you know, some of the people that are still in charge could actually not be there anymore in just a week's time. Just some week's time, which feels very odd. And, I mean, Macron clearly just opened the Pandora's box, you know, and it's likely that he will lose his gumbo and that it will not find a stronger majority than the very weak one he had before he called these general elections. But what will be the next balance of power is completely unclear. What is interesting is that, and that comes back to what I said about François Hollande in the beginning, this commitment by François Hollande in 2012 was actually the first time for decades, practically almost from the 50s, when we had a strong candidate for the presidential election running with another nuclear policy than than thinking nuclear is a pillar of our energy policy. And since then, there's been an increasing number of diverging views within political forces, which means that, I mean, like 15 years ago, what happened in the next National Assembly has no consequence for nuclear policy because they would all agree. Today, they stand with very different views from, I mean, the main players in the new left and ecologist coalition called for a nuclear phase out. Although some members of that coalition are still very much in favor of nuclear power. On the other end, the National Front, or the extreme right, commits to completely unrealistic statements. I mean, they for instance say they would build new EPRs by 2031, which, I mean, okay, so. And you know, pigs will fly, but that is the current situation. So there will be an impact, for sure. What the impact will be remains very unclear. And I think the Czech government would be wise waiting for the outcome before it makes any decision.
Any other questions or asking?
Maybe I would like to ask you, what do you think is like the public opinion about the nuclear energy in France?
There is an increasing support, but I think it's a weak one, and in any case, not of the same kind as the kind of strong support that we had back in the time when all political parties were agreeing and so on. And in a sense, I mean, so again, back more than 10 years ago, nuclear power was the pillar of our energy policy and was seen as part of national greatness and identity. So there was a very strong link, kind of emotional link to nuclear power, mostly positive. But there was also a minority that was kind of resisting this and calling to shift away from that representation. Even before Hollande made that statement, I mean, Fukushima was a real turning point. After Fukushima, a lot of people started thinking that we should consider the option of a nuclear phase out. Not as we want a nuclear phase out, but if the risk is confirmed, we want to be able to phase out. And that really opened that process with Hollande taking that position in 2012, and then a complete broadening of the scope of positions of political forces. What happened after, I mean, as a consequence of the Ukrainian crisis, although what I told you about the very bad performance of the French nuclear fleet should have been, the experience is that the energy crisis was even more acute in France, because on top of the consequences of the Ukrainian war that everyone in Europe experienced, we had this specific failure of the standardized nuclear fleet. I mean, the lesson you should take from that is that this dependency on standardized and massive nuclear fleet is a vulnerability. So we should reduce that dependency, but the conservatives managed to turn it around and actually activate the good old thinking of the 70s that nuclear power means energy security, means independence, and that is the reason for an increasing support. But when I say it's much weaker than it was before, it's not a support in the sense that we still need nuclear as part of our greatness. It's just that people don't think that an alternative is really possible, because as I showed, they have been told by the government that it's not.
Soweit Yves Marignac. Die gesamte Präsentation wird wie alle anderen auch in Kürze auf der Webseite von NEC 2024 in Prag erscheinen. Am Ende unserer heutigen Ausgabe von Don't Nuke the Climate, dem Podcast im Freien Radio Freistadt, gestaltet von Gabi Schweiger und Günther Heermeier, gibt's noch einen kleinen Ausblick auf den nächsten Teil. Dort werden dann Tim Judson und Tom Clements ganz ausführlich über die Geschäfte von Westinghouse, die ja auch ihre Finger im Spiel hat, in Europa berichten. Jetzt ein kleines Interview, ein kleiner Teaser von Tim Judson. Gabi Schweiger verabschiedet sich von euch, dankt fürs Zuhören. Reaktionen könnt ihr wie immer unter MGA für Mütter gegen Atomgefahr .frf für Freies Radio Freistadt @gmail.com an uns richten. Wir freuen uns auf Reaktionen. Tschüss, bis zum nächsten Mal.
Es geht ja hier im Wesentlichen um die Neuausrichtung von Polen oder die weiterführende nukleare Strategie in Tschechien zum Beispiel, dass die Firma Westinghouse aus den USA eine der Firmen ist, die diese neuen Reaktoren bauen soll. Und in diesem Zusammenhang, there would be the question, if you think, Tim, that there would be a possibility for a company like Westinghouse to build these reactors in Poland and the Czech Republic within the next decades?
I mean, the short answer to that is no, but the real answer is that Westinghouse doesn't have any intention of building any of these reactors. Westinghouse is only offering to sell, different countries their reactor design and let them build those reactors themselves. One of the clearest signs of this, Westinghouse has said that explicitly in the media multiple times, that it is not going to be involved in constructing AP1000 reactors. One of the interesting pieces of it that I've seen is, Westinghouse has an agreement with Ukraine to let Ukraine build AP1000s, and they've announced that they're planning to start building one in the next year or two. And you have to, if you know anything about Westinghouse, you have to ask, how is that even possible? Because Westinghouse doesn't have a supply chain for building AP1000 components and modules, and the reality is that a part of this deal that Westinghouse has with Ukraine is that Westinghouse will sell the unused components from one of the canceled new U.S. AP1000 projects to Ukraine and let them ship those components across the Atlantic Ocean and deliver them to Ukraine to start building these reactors. What's happening in other countries where Westinghouse is trying to cut deals like this, for instance, in Poland and Bulgaria, is Westinghouse is signing up, essentially conglomerates of local, manufacturers and contractors in each country to take on this project. And, that's what they did in the U.S., and it bankrupted U.S. companies, and it bankrupted Westinghouse itself. And so if this is going to be the model for how Westinghouse sells nuclear power plants in Europe, how is the same story not going to be repeated as what happened in the U.S.?
And one more question about the Big Hope, the SMRs. It's also in talk that Westinghouse could deliver such, so to say, new and small reactors. What do you think about this? Can you give us an estimation?
Well, Westinghouse is coming late to the game with small modular reactors. There are a number of other companies in the U.S. and elsewhere that have been ostensibly working on SMR designs for, 15, 20 years. And none of those seem to have very good prospects. Westinghouse only announced last year that it has all of a sudden a design for an SMR called the AP300, which it says is a scaled down version of the AP1000. But what it doesn't say is that the AP1000 was supposed to be a scaled up version of another reactor it designed in the 1990s called the AP600, which no utility in the US or elsewhere was interested in buying. And so they came up with the AP1000 because utility companies wanted a larger reactor, and that turned out to be a disaster. So now that the AP1000 is a disaster, they've now said they have an AP300. But the reality is that design doesn't exist yet. Okay. In the U.S., Westinghouse only started talking about the AP300 a year ago, and in terms of there being a design to even consider. They haven't even started a proceeding at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the U.S. to have that design reviewed. They're only in very preliminary discussions. So there's nothing Westinghouse doesn't. And the other thing Westinghouse has is they've been talking about a micro reactor, a 5 to 10 megawatt reactor, maybe less actually, that it's been discussing for several years. But that reactor design is also only in a preliminary discussion with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So we're not sure that design is even complete itself.
How's it works?
Doesn't work, and it's no hope for having small modular reactors.
Yeah, I think the danger of all of this, right, is that we have a climate crisis to address. And the longer we keep talking about, you know, putting all of this money and all this time and effort into supporting nuclear designs that can't be built for another 10 years, the longer we spend not doing what we can already do, which is start the transition to renewable energy and accelerate it.
That's an important point. No time to waste on this.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim.